I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper, and happy to have you on board to the podcast. Hope you're having a fantastic week. Doc and BYU sports every single day here on the Cougar Tracks Podcast. It's always powered by KSLSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mitch underscore Harper on Twitter, Mitch Harper KSL on Instagram, and at KSL Sports on all the major social platforms. Here's what we got on tap for today's show. We're breaking down the scholarship crunch for BYU football. Yeah, it's kind of a pressing topic because BYU, they recently had another individual enter the transfer portal. Not much of a surprise. We'll get to that. But where are the numbers at right now, at least expected, as we're about 93 days away till kickoff for BYU versus Utah? What do the numbers look like? And it's far closer to fall camp than the 93 days till kickoff. We're about, 65 days till fall camp, roughly, just estimating 4 weeks prior. Math's not my strong suit on the air. But about 65 days or so till fall camp, expected. So the numbers got to hammer out, and it likely will. It always does. The numbers always do, but we'll dive into the scholarship numbers and look at the scholarship math for BYU football in 2020. Also, some BYU basketball news, West Coast Conference basketball schedule matchups. We'll get into that and share my thoughts about, I got a question about the WCC, what their deal is with how they put together these scheduling matchups. I'll share my thoughts on that. And then also some bowl projections, and then a player spotlight, Bracken L. Backery, 93 days away till kickoff. But we'll start things off with the bowl projections. Sporting News released their 2020 way too early bowl projections for the 2020 season, and they have BYU taking on Fresno State in the New Mexico Bowl. It'd be the first time BYU would play in the New Mexico Bowl since their last appearance in 2010. Remember, they took on UTEP, and I kind of credit that bowl game, the 2010 New Mexico Bowl, as my breakthrough in the media. At that time, I was just doing a home grassroots podcast called Cougar Center, and me and my colleagues that were doing the podcast, we got approved for media credentials, and that kind of got my taste of media life covering that game. So dear memories, fond memories, rather, of being at the New Mexico Bowl, but BYU, Fresno State, in the New Mexico Bowl, not too thrilled about that. I'm not really too thrilled, honestly, about the Independence Bowl tie-in coming up in 2021, 2023, 2025. Most likely, that'll just be two bowl games when they go to Shreveport, but it is what it is. I mean, as long as ESPN takes care of them, and that's what they're going to do in this new TV deal, they'll find a bowl game for BYU, and they'll be okay. But still, New Mexico, probably before Christmas, not ideal, but it is what it is. Hopefully, BYU shocks everyone, and maybe they're 11-1. Hey, maybe they're 12-0. Not likely, but hey, anything can happen, right? Maybe they'd be in a conversation for a better bowl game if that was to happen. But New Mexico Bowl, BYU, Fresno State, the sporting news, they also had in their bowl projections, they had the New Year's Six, they had Boise State as the group of five representative in the Cotton Bowl against Texas. That would be a good bowl matchup. Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, LSU versus Notre Dame, Fiesta Bowl, Georgia versus Oregon. Ooh, ooh, that would be nice. That would be a really good game. Orange Bowl, North Carolina versus Penn State. Interesting, North Carolina. Rose Bowl, which is going to be a playoff semifinal, Ohio State versus Oklahoma. Get Oklahoma out of here, please. I mean, how many times is Oklahoma going to bore us to death in the college football playoff? They show up and get wrecked every single time. Get Oklahoma out of here, please. Get someone new out of the Big 12 Conference, please. Please. They never deliver in the playoff. I know it's against the best teams, but there's always a sizable gap between the number one seed and usually the number four seed, Oklahoma Sooners. And then in the other semifinal, wash, rinse, repeat. Am I right? Clemson versus Alabama, and I don't think you can argue against that. The way those two programs are recruiting, they're going to be probably at a minimum 11-1 at a minimum in the 2020 college football season. Maybe BYU can do that as well. Who knows? That's why you play the games. But BYU headed to the New Mexico Bowl, according to the projections from the sporting news. BYU basketball, West Coast Conference basketball conference pairings were released this week. And BYU, of course, in the West Coast Conference, they do 16 conference games, which is brilliant. It's been a great way for BYU and Gonzaga and St. Mary's to add additional non-conference games and bolster their resume. That's a reason why the WCC was going to have three teams in the Big Dance last year, because they have that scheduling flexibility. A lot of mid-major conferences are now bumping it up to 20 league games because they can't get non-conference games. BYU, Gonzaga, and St. Mary's, they can get neutral site games. So that's why there's flexibility for these teams to be able to play only 16 league games, and it works out great. It's worked out tremendous for Gonzaga, and I think it even worked out for BYU as well, because Dave Rose, towards the tail end of his tenure, he started to bolster the schedule big time. St. Mary's has as well, because it's not about the wins, it's about who you play and if you can beat them every once in a while. We saw that last year with BYU. They had eight losses, but still, that didn't hurt them, and the Cougars were projected as high as maybe a sixth seed in a lot of bracketology projections before the tournament ultimately got canceled. But the WCC released their conference pairings, and for the third straight year, Santa Clara only appearing once on BYU's schedule, and BYU does not travel to Santa Clara. I'm fine with that. The only one trip to a team is at LMU. The Lions will not come to Provo. A little bit of a dicey game. LMU always gives BYU fits, it seems like. They never win, but they always give BYU some headaches. And that'll probably be a tough game in Gersten Pavilion. Then, of course, you got two games against the Zags. Pacific gets back on the schedule for a pair of games. Pepperdine, Portland, St. Mary's, San Diego, USF. But I want axe to grind, though, with the scheduling. And it kind of has always shown itself since BYU's been in the WCC. It feels like the WCC puts Gonzaga at the top, and rightfully so. Gonzaga is the premier brand in the conference right now as far as basketball. I think as an institution, BYU far and away exceeds all of them. And BYU is probably an athletic department is far greater than anyone in this league. But keep in mind, men's basketball is the moneymaker for the West Coast Conference. So they're going to cater to Gonzaga. I get all that. That's fine. They've earned their right. But St. Mary's always gets like paired up with Gonzaga in this kind of preferential scheduling and things like that. BYU has to play Portland twice. And you would think, oh, that's two easy wins. Yeah, it probably is. But Portland is a killer for your resume. And every year, it seems like Gonzaga and St. Mary's only have to play the Pilots once. Again, it's not a huge deal because ultimately it all evens itself out and you got to beat each other and you got to have a chance to win a title. But it's just, it feels like the WCC puts Gonzaga men's basketball, St. Mary's men's basketball, 1 and 2, and then BYU third. Not a distant third, but still third. And it's just kind of like, understand that BYU brings the WCC a ton of eyeballs. Gonzaga brings a ton of eyeballs nationally and within the sport of college basketball, but You're talking about broad audience. BYU is the one program that has a national following. They're one of only two fan bases that actually have a following. Outside of BYU and Gonzaga, there's no fan support in any of these teams. So you always got to remember that. St. Mary's is a great basketball program, but they have no fan base. They have no following. I mean, you go to Vegas for the WCC tournament, there's not a St. Mary's fan there. There's probably like 10 of them. That's it. That's all. It's Gonzaga and BYU, and that's it. And Gonzaga's got the most of them because they all buy the tickets because they know they're going to be in the championship game for two straight decades. Anyway. But yeah, BYU, WCC scheduling has been a real positive, though, for the league. And I think the WCC continues to grow as one of the best leagues in college basketball. I believe that wholeheartedly. And I think it's right there with the Pac-12 in terms of the best leagues in the West. They've passed, WCC has passed up the Mountain West Conference. It has. No doubt about it in my mind. I was there at the Mountain West Conference tournament this past March before everything shut down. And the Mountain West Conference tournament literally had like the smallest crowd I've ever seen for a Mountain West Conference tournament. And I was going to those things for a lot of years, dating back to the WAC tournament in 98. But ever since the Mountain West started up in 99, attendance has been dipping, and I think interest is dipping as well. Whereas the WCC, a lot of schools are growing, and you hope the fan bases start to take a little bit more attention, people in those markets, but it's tough because you're in big pro towns, and you're probably like, what, seventh or eighth rung on the list? Like, look at, I mean, LMU is the equivalent to, what, Southern Utah in interest in the Utah media? Just what it is. So that's one of the tough things to face in the WCC, but looking at this league, BYU is one of the crown jewels. They're just not always treated that way, it feels like, by the powers that be in the WCC office. Just my feeling on that, looking at those matchups. But BYU basketball is going to be a lot of fun to watch. 2020-2021 season. They're back to voluntary workouts yesterday, the men's basketball, women's basketball, and football. So good things happening there. For football, they got things going at the indoor practice facility and in the weight room. Strength and conditioning coaches are checking temperatures, making sure everyone's healthy, and they're making sure to follow all the protocols necessary to keep these student athletes safe. And that's what needs to happen in this new normal that we're living in amid the global pandemic that is the COVID-19. And for football, there was some recent news this week. Alex Muscala, linebacker/defensive end, redshirt freshman, he entered the transfer portal. Now, that wasn't a complete surprise by any stretch because Muscala had an opportunity to really emerge in the two deep right away the first time he stepped on campus in the spring of 2019. And that spring ball, it kind of showed itself how much of a learning curve there was going to be for Muscala. Doesn't mean they can't be a good football player at college, but there was a steep learning curve. And remember, in 2019 in spring ball, there was really no competition to go up against. He had the chance to really lay claim to being a starting linebacker in the inside from day one. Like, there was Zane Anderson, there was Isaiah Kafusi. That was it, though. They had to move Kavika Fanua from running back to linebacker. They had to make some moves to kind of put it together. And last year's linebacking unit was fantastic at season's end. But in springtime, it was a huge question mark. And Muscala was right there for the opportunity to maybe get some significant playing time. And he was a guy that was lauded by Ed Lamb and even Elisa Tuiaki, but more so Ed Lamb. He was more of an Ed Lamb recruit for his work ethic in the gym and the way he played on the football field in high school. He was a good player at Los Alamitos, but for whatever reason, it just didn't work at BYU. And he switched over to defensive end in the springtime, and it just didn't work out to where he was kind of buried on the depth chart still and didn't move up any sort of rung on the depth chart ladder. Still a young program as a whole, so it's tough for really young guys to make an impact right away, but he had that chance when he stepped foot on campus in 2019, and it just didn't work out. And now he's in the transfer portal, and you wish him the best because going forward, you just want to see these guys find a landing spot, graduate, and get their situation taken care of in the classroom because, one, it helps BYU's APR, which is always a delicate thing to handle, but then, two, you just want these guys to have success, plain and simple. When they get to college football, you want them to have a positive experience, whether it ends up at BYU or anywhere else. You want these guys to have success beyond just the football field. So best of luck to Alex Muscala moving forward. But It brings up an interesting conversation. BYU and their scholarship allotment for 2020. Much has been made about the scholarship crunch for BYU, and I track it as closely as I can. BYU now under Kalani Sitake, Kalani wants to make it a deal where, you know, scholarship players and walk-ons, they all feel the same. And I think that's great. Whereas before it was more like, hey, these are the scholarship guys, these are the walk-on guys, and it was kind of a little bit more transparent. Kalani doesn't make a big hype video about a guy receiving a scholarship. He just wants everyone to feel on equal footing and create equal competition every single day in practice. And by that sense, I like that. So I still try to keep track as close as I possibly can to the comings and goings in regards to scholarship allotment. And by my count, and keep in mind, for those of you that don't follow this sort of thing, 85 players on scholarship is the limit for a college football team. So 85. By my estimation, from how my tracking and the numbers I've been following, I'm counting right now after Alex Muscala entered the transfer portal. And again, this is an estimation based on my tracking and estimation. BYU is currently at 93 scholarship players. Now, keep in mind, that doesn't include any sort of return missionaries that might be coming home early that decide to stay home from the mission. Most of those guys, if they do decide to stay home from the mission, I would expect those individuals most likely are going to gray shirt this year. Unless it's kind of like maybe a Chase Roberts, you find some wiggle room in there for a guy like him. But outside of that, I think pretty much everyone's going to gray shirt if they end up staying home from the mission after returning home due to the pandemic. So about 93 scholarship players is kind of how I have it estimated at the moment. So there's going to have to be some trim downs. There's going to be some ways to get creative. You might have to have some true freshmen gray shirt, like last year, Caleb Christensen, a guy out of Skyview High School who's going to be a contributor to this year's BYU football team, whether it be on defense in the secondary or also in the return game. Christensen last year was a gray shirt, had 12 credit hours during the fall semester, was in school, and then he enrolled at BYU in January, and then his eligibility clock started this year. When you gray shirt, it doesn't impact your eligibility clock. A guy like Harvey Younga was a gray shirt back in the day, back in 2005, who's now the running back coach for the Cougars. So gray shirts are pretty common, and I think that's going to have to be something that BYU utilizes to their advantage because there's some number crunching to handle, and you don't want to just cut guys. So if there's some true freshmen that maybe aren't ready to go right away that could possibly push to be in a two deep, that's more of a developmental guy, going to need an extra year to maybe get his feet under him, get used to Utah County and Provo lifestyle, maybe a gray shirt could be in the cards. And I think that's where BYU will have to kind of trim things down. Because Jason Ayu, director of recruiting at BYU now, he was asked when he addressed the media a couple weeks back about if they could be adding any more pieces to the 2020 roster. And he noted that they're full. And that's because of this scholarship crunch. That's why they're full. So that's something to keep in mind. I have it estimated around 93 guys. But I go through the roster, and I got to tell you, in past years, of my years tracking all this with scholarships and personnel tracking, there was a lot of years where I said, well, personally, again, personal evaluations here, I would look at a roster and say, yeah, probably about 20 of these guys, push came to shove, maybe they're not worthy of a scholarship. I'll tell you what, these 93 players that I have, again, estimated to be on scholarship, some of these guys might be preferred walk-ons, going to preferred walk-on status. Who knows? There's the juggling act with all this. But in years past, there would be 20 or so guys where I would feel like that's probably not a contributor at the college football level. That's probably a guy that doesn't warrant a scholarship. I go through these 93 players, and I'm like, these are good college football players. BYU's depth under Kalani Sitake has got significantly better, where there's a lot of intriguing, really good athletes in the program. I firmly believe that. I mean, when you're talking about guys like Gabe Summers, who I highlighted last week in the player countdown, he's a preferred walk-on. Gabe Summers is a walk-on, and he's going to be someone that's competing for playing time. There's a lot of good talent in the BYU football program right now, and it's not easy to just say, so-and-so, you're gone. See you later. So there's going to be individuals that end up medically retiring too. The numbers always work itself out. It always does. It, whenever people make a big hype about, oh, there's a scholarship crunch, how will it work itself out? It always does. It's a really a moot point. There's some guys, they'll go through a summer and they're just like, I don't have it in me anymore. I don't want to play. It's not fun anymore and I'm done. That's what some guys do. Some guys physically can't play anymore. They got to medically retire. So it always works itself out. But that just kind of highlights, again, the juggling act that Kalani Sitake and his program have right now in terms of balancing the scholarships and juggling all of that. But it's a good thing to do, though, because you want to ensure that you got the depth necessary to make it happen. Then you make decisions going forward. And I remember back in 2017, you know, Elisa Tuiaki noted that competition's got to happen every single year. These scholarships are good for 1 year, and competition has to happen. I'd have to pull up the sound. It was a general media scrum at a media day, but basically laid it on the line that you got to compete every single year for your scholarship. You can't just assume you're getting that every single year. So competition has to take place, and BYU's got, I think, a ton of competition, and I'm really curious to see how this all shakes out with the personnel. But again, it always does. You know, you get some guys back that are returning home from missions maybe this spring or just recently got back, like a Connor Pay, Seth Willis, Tyson Lewis, offensive linemen that are probably going to be buried on the depth chart. Maybe you have that conversation and say, can you guys grayshirt? Can it work? Because, I mean, that's a tough financial commitment. That would be a big thing on families, and it's not doable for all families. So it's tough to handle. But I think in the long run, it can work for a lot of these guys because get a year back, get physically healthy and ready to go, and then you come back in January, and then you're kind of hitting the ground running where you have a chance to compete right away and be in much better shape and condition to actually make an impact in your first year and not have it wasted and just kind of getting scrub minutes, if at all, in your first year back. So something to keep in mind, but that's the scholarship crunch for BYU. I wouldn't put too much worry into it, though. I don't think it's something to be overly concerned about. These coaches are communicating with these players. In fact, I think it's a positive that they have this sort of issue because, one, it means not many guys want to leave. I think if you have a ton of scholarships available, it usually means that you're getting a lot of guys that are bouncing or dipping, getting out of the program and leaving. That's not the case for BYU football. I mean, they've had a few guys leave. They had Alex Muscala. They had Skylar Southam, who went to Utah, is now a walk-on with the Utes, but he was the backup kicker. Joe Critchell, he was, the fourth-string quarterback. You know, so they've had some subtractions. Austin Chambers, he was a defensive line, just kind of buried on the depth chart. So they're not having their instant, they're not having their top of the depth chart guys leaving. That's a positive. BYU is keeping their numbers intact. That's a good thing as they go forward and then handling the scholarship crunch. Got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll continue the player countdown here on the Cougar Tracks podcast as we're 93 days away till kickoff. This is the Cougar Tracks podcast powered by KSLSports.com.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you think of when you hear this? What show do you think of? If you're saying College Game Day, you know your college football. I, whenever I hear this song, it's instantly thinking of like College Game. It's like that midway point of the show where they just suddenly break into this song. I'm hyped for college football, folks. If you can't tell, I'm ready to go. Give me some college football in my life. 93 days away till kickoff when BYU gets the season rolling against the Utah Utes. September 3rd, can the Cougars avoid the 10th straight loss to the Utes? Goodness gracious, that's tough to say. But 93 days till kickoff, and number 93 for the Cougars is honestly one of my favorite guys to interview in the program. He's a gem. I can't wait to talk to him this season, get some one-on-ones with Brackenell Bakri this year, because he's a passionate dude, and he loves the game of football. I mean, you always love guys that just truly love what they're doing, and you can sense it. You can sense when a guy has passion for what they do. And that's Brackenell Bakri when it comes to the game of football. And, man, he's had to work for everything he's earned in this BYU football program. 6'3", 286-pound senior defensive end, defensive lineman for the Cougars out of Brighton High School in Cottonwood Heights, former walk-on, now heading into a senior season, and he's a projected starter for BYU. At a minimum, he's a returning starter. Last year, started in a lot of games for the Cougar defensive line that, you know, didn't have the most production that they thought they would have. He started in 10 games a season ago and had 37 total tackles and posted 1.5 tackles for loss and had a career-high 7 tackles at Toledo and another 6 against Utah State. Al Bakri, he's a good football player. Pass rushing is not, I wouldn't say that's one of his strong suits, getting off the edge, that quick first step that maybe you think of with a defensive end, but I think he's a good technician. I think he's good with his hands. I think it's just the get-off for Brackenell Bakri is not as quick as maybe you would like from a defensive end, but I think he's going to get better this season. I would expect so. Like, what's his room to grow? Is he kind of a byproduct of this is who he is? We'll see. But I think El Bakri is a solid performer on the defensive line. I mean, 61 total tackles the past 2 years, one of the more productive defensive linemen. And in a way, I think he sometimes gets forgotten. Even guys like myself sometimes maybe overlook Brackenell Bakri, but we shouldn't. I think Brackenell Bakri could be a starter again this year at defensive end, but with BYU going into a four-down lineman front, most likely he could play in the interior defensive tackle because there were some issues at defensive end. It wasn't maybe his strong suit. And if he is a defensive tackle full-time for BYU, then he'd probably be a backup behind Lorenzo Fawatea and Kyrus Tonga. But if he does play a little bit of defensive end, kind of that hybrid role that we've seen from Fawatea, from guys like Alden Tofa, Al Bakri on a three-lineman front could play out of the defensive end spot. So something to keep an eye on. But he's got a ton of knowledge, a ton of experience in the program, and he's going to see a ton of playing time in 2020. Because you're talking about tons of experience, tons of knowledge of the defense. I mean, I know there's going to be some changeups here, but Brackenell Bakri, I think, is one of the mainstays on this defensive line for BYU in 2020. I think people got to recognize that. And I think El Bakri has got game, though. I like his attitude. I like his confidence. I like his personality. Recently got married, I believe. So let's see if that changes his style and demeanor with the media. But Brackenell Bakri, number 93, younger brother to Braden El Bakri, former BYU Cougar, who delivered the lone highlight of the 2017 season. I'll never forget that. Like, literally, the one highlight of the 2017 season was Braden El Bakri and that hit against San Jose State. 2-1-7 football teams duking it out for literally nothing at stake. And Braden El Bakri delivered a monster hit on that special teams. And that was truly the one highlight of the 2017 season. One of the El Bakri boys bringing it home in 2017. But Bracken's had to fight, man. 2014, he joined the program as a walk-on, a true walk-on, and then comes back from the mission. 2017, he's a walk-on. I remember he joined, I think, late. He was about like around when the season started, redshirted, and then he just continued to work his way up. I remember Elisa Tuiaki told him, I don't think you can be a guy off the edge or a guy in the interior of the defensive line, if you want to find a way to stick in college football. El Bakri had some 8,000 calories a day diet. He's getting up at 2 a.m., pounding PB&J sandwiches. El Bakri's all about it, man. He's into the grind. He's into the work that comes with being a college football player. So excited to see what he can do in his senior year with the Cougars. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Cougar Tracks podcast. We'll be back tomorrow for number 92, who's on the list tomorrow. Well, it's a new name that you got to get familiar with, who I think has a bright future ahead of him in his BYU career. So I'll get to that and a whole lot of other stories here on the Cougar Tracks podcast, powered by KSLSports.com.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.